Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, September 4, 2015. And on today's podcast, we're going to discuss the Middle East once again. We're going to look at President Obama's Iranian deal and primarily the realignment of various nations and other interests as a result of the passage of this deal. There are many things going on in the Middle East right now, many other developments now ongoing, such as Turkey and the United States agreeing to allow the United States to use a Turkish airbase to attack targets of the Islamic State as well as Turkish airspace. We can also look at Turkey's decision to intervene militarily in the struggle against the Islamic State and what that might mean for Turkey's involvement in the entire oil corridor. Russia, as well, as decided to intervene militarily on the side of the anti-Islamic State forces, the pro-Assad forces in Syria, if you will, sending large numbers of Russian military personnel, some news reports say thousands, into Syria, as well as their air forces, with the Iran deal now before the U.S. Congress, which is in the middle of its 60-day window to accept or reject the deal. News reports, especially those in the dailies like the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, and others over the last week have reported that the president now has the votes to pass the deal. So he feels confident, I guess, enough to go to Alaska, leave Washington, journey to Alaska to work on his climate change agenda and continue his efforts to fundamentally change America. With the final passage of the Iranian deal now imminent, with many of its provisions irreversible, whether it passes or not, Iran's competitors for control of the Middle East are not just going to accept it without doing everything they can to curb Iranian power and influence. I mentioned before that Saudi Arabia and some of the Gulf Arab states are scrambling to acquire nuclear weapons of their own. But the real player, the real power player, could turn out to be Turkey. Maybe the Ottoman Empire is being rebuilt. Turkey has some real advantages as a regional leader. It has the largest economy in the Middle East. It is 99% Muslim, but it is a NATO member. So its ancient role of arbiter between the Christian West and the Muslim East is still intact. Turkey has the largest and most powerful military in the Middle East and perhaps the second most powerful military in NATO, behind only the United States. Turkey was a late member of NATO, and so it was never part of the deal whereby the United States agreed to accept responsibility for its defense, and therefore Turkey had to develop and maintain its own military. Turkey is the most likely leader in the struggle for regional control, and with its latest military agreement, the United States seems to be setting it up as a blocking force against Iran. Turkey and Iran are natural competitors, even though they hate the Kurds. They can use the Kurds against each other. Neither wants an independent Kurdistan carved from each of their territory, as the Saudis have proposed. Kurdistan, which is a territory covering northern Iraq, Iran, Syria, is the battleground between them. Turkey is a Sunni nation, and Iran a Shiite nation. Saudi Arabia, on the other hand, has no shared interest with Iran since the demise of Iraq as a buffer state and the rise of the Islamic State. The Saudis likely see themselves as on the front lines in the trenches of the struggle with Iran for regional dominance. Saudi Arabia is Arab and a Sunni Islamic kingdom, while Iran is Shiite, a Shiite nation. Since the oil fields are the source of Saudi wealth and power, and most of the Saudi population lives in close proximity to the oil fields, Shiite expansion into that area is very frightening for the Saudis. Interestingly, though, a recent story came out that the terrorist wanted by Saudi Arabia for the Khobar Towers bombing of June 25, 1996, was living and being sheltered by Iran. This attack was against a housing complex in the city of Khobar, Saudi Arabia, which was being used as housing for foreign military personnel. 19 U.S. military personnel were killed there. A U.S. court found Iran and its proxy, Hezbollah, guilty of orchestrating the attack when the bomber decided to fly from Tehran to Beirut. A few days ago, a Saudi royal jet was waiting for him there. He was arrested and flown to Saudi Arabia. Apparently, the Iranians gave him to the Saudis. But why? It makes no sense, or does it? There's an old Middle East proverb that, paraphrasing it, kind of goes like this. Whatever you think you're seeing is not what you are actually seeing, and whoever you think did it is not who actually did it. What about Russia, then? Russia, in the process of greatly expanding its role of aiding Bandar al-Assad in Syria. That means helping, or at least pretending to help, in the fight against the Islamic State. There are reports that thousands of Russian troops are pouring into Syria, which opens the possibility of their coming into direct conflict with Americans. But who knows if those reports are completely true and accurate? We know that Russia was one of the nations negotiating with Iran and one who signed off on the deal. As soon as the ink was dry, Russia started shipping advanced weapons to Iran, including, apparently, S-300 anti-aircraft missile defense systems, thus making it impossible to destroy the Iranian nuclear plants without using nuclear-armed long-distance missiles. This is all just a reminder that Russia is not abandoning the Russian-Syrian base or the Assad government. Once again, we find ourselves looking at this Iranian deal and wondering, how can it possibly be in the best interest of the United States? I can see very little that the Iranians give up making this deal. I see a great deal that the United States give up. I can't see how Iran having nuclear weapons benefits the United States, Israel, Saudi Arabia, or the Gulf Arab states. It seems to me that it reduces Israel's options tremendously. If the Israelis are determined not to accept Iranian nuclear weapons, their options are limited. Conflict will continue, I predict. And once again, predicting conflict in the Middle East is about as safe a bet as there is. My point is that the Iranian deal makes conflict more likely, not less likely. The cream seems to be rising to the top, though. The ancient nations of the Middle East, the countries that are actually nations, Turkey, Iran, Egypt, and Israel, the cream is rising to the top, and conflict is more likely. At least that's the way I see it, folks. Until next time, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.